When Dr. Alex Delaware's doorbell rings at his Hillside Bel Air home, it shatters more than his peaceful early retirement. His visitor, Detective Milo Sturgis, pulls him back into a world he thought he'd escaped, one filled with damaged psyches and unspeakable crimes. A psychiatrist named Morton Handler and his companion have been brutally murdered, with 7-year-old Melody Quinn as the only potential witness. Despite initial reluctance and haunting memories of a past traumatic case involving someone named Hickel, Delaware agrees to help interview the child. This decision marks the end of Delaware's Be Kind to Alex time, a necessary healing period after burning out spectacularly. A prodigy who earned his PhD at 24 and became a program director at Western Pediatric Medical Center by 28, Delaware had pushed himself to exhaustion with 70-hour work weeks until Hickel's suicide in his home triggered dramatic life changes. Now, those peaceful days of playing guitar, reading for enjoyment, and building a relationship with Robin are about to end. What makes Delaware such a compelling protagonist is this contradiction: a brilliant professional who burned out dramatically, yet can't resist helping vulnerable children. As he steps back into the darkness, we witness the tension between self-preservation and moral obligation that will drive him throughout this investigation into Los Angeles's most disturbing secrets. Melody Quinn is a paradox, an ordinary 7-year-old in extraordinary circumstances. Small, with grave features and oversized brown eyes, she lives with her mother, Benita, in a tiny apartment that feels like an architect's postscript. When Delaware meets her, she's withdrawn, thumb-sucking, clutching a grimy doll and a turquoise stuffed walrus from the absent father she's never met. Melody takes Ritalin, prescribed by Dr. Toll, who dismissively views her as genetically inferior. During a medication-free beach day, the transformation is striking. The sedated child becomes animated and joyful, pointing at surfers and splashing with newfound coordination. Her anxious, "Was I a good girl?" afterward reveals how deeply she's internalized that her natural behavior is problematic. Delaware's hypnosis session yields only one clue about the murder night: dark. Later, Melody wakes screaming for her father, prompting her mother to reveal a shocking scar. "He did that to me with a chain," evidence of paternal violence. Melody represents vulnerable children whose voices go unheard, medicated not for illness, but to control their spirit. Dr. Toll's office contrasts colonial furniture and cute prints with the smell of dirty diapers from an overbooked waiting room. With snow-white hair and displayed diplomas, he personifies medical authority. When Delaware requests stopping Melody's Ritalin, Toll defends his 60-milligram daily prescription for normal childhood behaviors like poor attention and occasional tantrums. His disturbing perspective surfaces as he describes Melody as a victim of inferior genes from limited parents, insisting medication is her only hope. "What we're doing is giving these kids a fighting chance," he explains. "The playing field isn't level, never has been, never will be." This pseudo-compassionate framing masks what Delaware recognizes as pseudo-scientific fascism, using medical authority to control rather than heal. Toll represents our anxiety about healthcare power imbalances when experts dismiss concerns and authority figures dictate what's best without listening, establishing a key theme: institutional power weaponized against the vulnerable. 20 acres of Malibu real estate houses La Casa de los Niños, a residential institution founded by Reverend Augustus McCaffrey for society's unwanted children, abused, neglected, orphaned, and those with physical and psychological problems. Superficially, it seems idyllic. Clean facilities in a beautiful location, in-house teaching, therapeutic animals, and a gentleman's brigade of corporate men serving as male role models. Delaware's tour reveals disturbing elements. Children with cerebral palsy struggle without help in the cafeteria, while counselors offer only verbal encouragement. When Delaware questions whether exposing disadvantaged children to wealthy lifestyles might frustrate them, his guide Tim Kruger responds with rehearsed optimism about only lack of motivation limiting success. Most concerning are four windowless bunkers with sloping ramps leading to iron doors, dismissed as storage. Later, Delaware witnesses a child named Rodney being carried by staff, one silencing his screams with a hand over his mouth. Reverend McCaffrey presents a stark contrast, a massive man speaking gently about transforming mere statistics into individuals with souls while maintaining a self-satisfied demeanor. Delaware's investigation reveals Handler was a burned-out psychiatrist with meticulous finances but careless therapy notes. Nine files of psychopathic men stand out, particularly Maurice Bruno, whom Handler called repeatedly before his death. Bruno's subsequent murder suggests they were criminal partners. A disturbing network connects seemingly unrelated individuals. Tim Kruger had falsified credentials and killed a fellow student. More shocking, Dr. Tao, Judge Hayden, and Stuart Hickel grew up together on Brindamore Island as the three heads of state, with McCaffrey as their janitor. Kim Hickel reveals her husband didn't commit suicide. Despite recovering from depression after his arrest and planning for the future, the others murdered him to prevent exposure. She describes men in cars with the CASA insignia picking Stuart up, returning him excited and trembling in early mornings. This network demonstrates how wealth, professional status, and institutional authority shield predators who protect each other while victimizing the voiceless. Under pressure, Tim Kruger reveals Melody Quinn is held at La Casa, her mother murdered by a partially paralyzed man named Earl on McCaffrey's orders. The Gentleman's Brigade serves as cover for pedophiles, about a quarter being child molesters mixed among legitimate volunteers. They target vulnerable children who can't communicate, those with disabilities, non-English speakers, or orphans without family connections. Stuart Hickel had been caught abusing children at his wife's school. Fearing exposure, Judge Hayden lured him with false promises before Towle drugged him. They staged his suicide in Delaware's office to force Delaware's retirement. Dr. Towle reveals that years ago, a confrontation with his wife Lila resulted in her death and their son Willie Jr.'s injury. McCaffrey covered it up as a car accident. McCaffrey later recruited the successful Dr. Towle to collect on past obligations. The final revelation? Willie Jr. survived and became Earl. Melody's resemblance to Lila reveals she is Towle's granddaughter. This web of blackmail shows how a single moral compromise can trap someone in escalating corruption. Delaware recovers in the hospital while arranging for Melody to live with a childless couple in Bakersfield who have access to a gifted child psychologist. 6 weeks after La Casa's fall, Delaware learns that after arresting Judge Hayden, Milo allowed him to dress in his study where he found a hidden gun. As Hayden bragged about abusing children, Milo saw only darkness in him and executed him, knowing Hayden would likely escape justice through wealth and influence. This conclusion raises profound questions about justice and healing. Delaware's arrangement for Melody shows his commitment to helping traumatized children, while Milo's vigilante action acknowledges a harsh reality. Systems often fail to hold the powerful accountable. When the bow breaks reminds us that individual healing is possible through proper care, yet systemic injustice persists when wealth shields perpetrators from consequences.